Hey, what's up, guys? This is Deion Brown, and you are listening to Man vs. Brand. Now, I know it's felt like I've been away for a while. Listen, if you know me, you know that I had a family reunion. We were in Kinston, North Carolina, having a great old time. 80 of us gathered to celebrate, amongst others, my grandfather's 91st year of life. It's awesome, man. But we all came down with COVID, right? So for the last week and a half, I've been sitting in my place contemplating what's going to be the thing that will pull me out of being lethargic. What's that thing that's going to make me really want to get out of bed and engage in a meaningful way? Well, I think I found the solution. I have Donnie Boyden on the line. He is the author of Fucked to Focus. Now, I pause the way that I do because I think that there is something sort of salacious and possibly profound with these curse word, strong titled books, right? We've started to see a trend of them. But there's something maybe different, at least I think, in Donnie's story. I'm going to let him tell it to you because I think he's a better orator of his own tale. But it's a story that feels to me very much like it's rooted in the term, got it from the mud, right? A lot of folks talk about getting it from the mud. And what that means is that you are very much in the trenches. For Donnie, that may mean hearkening back to his days in the armed forces. He's a veteran. It may also be his roots. It may be the way that he's had to fight for his businesses to fail and to become successful. Or it's possibly how he roots for the folks that he champions as a coach. Anyway, I'm going to let him tell his story. Hopefully you enjoy it. We're going to get to that in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Still trying to figure out the keys to life? Well, according to the locks, it's money, power, and respect. Learn to gain or grow these three concepts with Deion Brown and his podcast. With 20 years of expertise in guiding and coaching businesses and brands at the highest level, Deion is having the conversations that can lead to your big breakthrough. Welcome, and let's begin.
What's up, Donnie? How are you? Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Deion, stoked to hang out with you, brother, man. I'm friggin', you know, and welcome back to the land of the living. So good on you. You know, family first is always a motto I follow. But so for your listeners, Donnie Boveen, I'm the CEO and founder of the Success Champion family of companies. And how I got here is did 4 years in the Marine Corps, 20 years straight commissioned sales. I've never actually had a salaried position in my life. I turned 40 before I even knew this whole idea that you could be an entrepreneur, run your own business. I didn't even know it was a thing, man. I grew up in a blue collar family where you went, you got a job, you worked for other people. And so turned 40, and I think that's a pivotal moment in life when you start thinking about and contemplating, you know, what's your journey, what's your thing going to be. And at the age of 40, I launched my company, Success Champions, and through a series of events and happenstances, I ran my company straight into the ground because I had no damn idea of what the hell I was doing. I mean, it was so bad. My wife literally had to cash in her 401k to get her Jeep back from repossession, to save our house and farm from being, you know, taken over by the banks. And she looked at me in that moment and told me to get off my ass and go sell something. And I started fighting, scrapping, clawing, figuring out how to build a business, found podcasting in May of 2018. Had an international non-compete come up in September of 2018. And now flash forward to where I am now. And I have three companies, two of the top podcasts in the world, five best-selling books now, and a partridge in a pear tree. So it's been a hell of a journey going from not knowing I can do this to damn near losing everything to building a global brand and empire. And we're having a lot of fun, man, impacting and changing the game for a lot of small business owners out there.
Awesome. So there's a lot that you just told in that in that tale, right? I think the thing that I want to discuss is, you know, when that first business wasn't working out, right? And you had turned 40, you started this business, you went into it maybe with some idea about what a business would look like, right? And it didn't work out. And there's a moment, I think, when you realize it's not going to work out, right? When you're looking at the payments, the bills, you know, the money that you've spent, how did you, outside of your wife telling you to get off your ass, how did you mentally prepare for all of the work it would take for the next step, right? How did you bypass the understanding that this was going to fail and then shifted or pivoted your mind to focus on the activities that you would then have to do in order to rebuild the things that you had lost?
Man, it's a brilliant question. And the answer is going to sound simple, but it wasn't. One of the crazy driving forces for me as I was building all this out was the idea that people were watching. And I know that may sound crazy as hell, but at the moment when I got the darkest, two thoughts kept me going. One is I made up this imaginary story that people were watching my journey to see if they could justify the craziness of what I attempted. So I thought, and I told myself this often, that if I threw in the towel and gave up on building this company, that I would prove their fears correct and they would never get in the game. Now, whether anybody actually was watching my ass or not, I have no idea. But I kept telling myself, I'm like, dude, if you don't do this, you're letting them down. The second thing that I can tell you that happened is in that moment of darkness when, you know, after I didn't feel like I was being a man anymore, taking care of my wife and my promises to her of, you know, financially taking care of the family, is I went to look in the mirror. And as I looked in the mirror, man, I realized that I wasn't proud of the dude that was staring back at me. And I realized that I had to get right with that guy. And to do that was going to take some work. And that meant I had to start doing the things that I would expect others do and start living up to higher standards than I was currently living with, man. And I tell you, the day I got proud of that guy I was looking at in the mirror, things started clicking and things started really coming together. So it was really two driving forces, man. I'm going to prove their fears right and actually liking the man in the mirror.
Now, what's I think interesting about your second point is that you started liking that guy and then things started clicking. Hmm. It sounds like it wasn't really dependent on things clicking that you had to then start liking that guy.
Oh, right? 100%. 100%. Yeah. I mean, had I waited till I started liking the guy, things would have never clicked, because I think often through our journey, we don't sit back enough and really do enough self-exploration to figure out who the hell we are. And I knew that when I launched the company, I was done working for people, but that was only one portion of the story. I still had no idea who the hell I was. And one thing people don't tell you as you build your company is you're going to meet the man in the mirror as you're building your company, because you're going to get to a point when you no longer have any excuses you can use. You know, when you work for other people, man, excuses come easy. You can blame the economy. You can blame, you know, if you're in sales side, lack of leads. You can blame, you know, competition. Yeah, you can throw all this stuff at it. And it all sounds like legitimate complaints, like real things, because you can convince yourself. When it's your company, none of those complaints, none of those excuses make sense anymore. And you got to start owning up to those things. And when you get to the place where success is your fault and failure is your fault, man, you learn really quick, but that there's no fucking excuse in the world that's going to get you through any sort of bullshit of you trying to bullshit yourself.
Absolutely, man. And I think what's also interesting about that is that as an entrepreneur, as a CEO specifically, you don't really have the same ecosystem that you have as an employee for excuses, sure. Right? Like as an employee, you can talk to the person next to you and be like, man, it sucks. And they're like, yeah, this really does. And you're just feeding off of each other's like dislike of what's happening, whether it's real or imagined, right? But when you're at a certain level, when you're driving your own business, there's really no one else to look at but yourself, or you can choose to be neglectful and just, like you said, right? Just pick at things to justify why it may not be working out here, why you may not want to wake up for the thing that you committed yourself to. Yeah, so I think that's mad interesting.
Yeah, no, what I would say to, I mean, One of the dumbest things I did in addition to all this is I made myself a damn island. I didn't want people to know how shitty the business was. I didn't want people to know how bad I was screwing up, because I thought if people knew how bad things were, that nobody would do business with me. But the most interesting thing happened is I started telling people where I was screwing up. Some people leaned in, offered advice, suggestions. Some people became clients because I was vulnerable in the moment. And, you know, but a lot of it is, as I was sharing my screw ups, people started asking me questions about, you know, how would they do this, or how would they handle the situation? I'm like, don't ask me. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing at this moment. I'm still screwing shit up. But I started answering their questions, and a lot of solutions and answers came by answering their questions, gave me my own answers to my own struggles. So, man, don't make yourself an island. Get around other people that are going for it, going through the things. And rise together, because when you make yourself an island, man, misery loves company, and you'll make yourself miserable as hell, you know, doing it all on your own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about Fuck to Focus, right? Listen, hearing this part of your story, it sounds obvious where the book came from, but I've learned in just now sort of pursuing authorship and listening to other people who are either, you know, sort of in that journey or approaching that journey, that sometimes a book is a culmination of multiple different life paths, life experiences. So where did you get the inspiration to write this particular book?
When I launched the companies, I was listening to a lot of Gary Vee, Tim Ferriss, Tony Robbins, Joe Rogan, Jen Sincere, you know, all the people. And a lot of me making the leap was done under this guise that building a business should be pretty easy. You know, the way they talked about it, I felt like it was going to be an easy endeavor. And I was cocky enough to believe that, you know, I'd had a very successful sales career, so launching a business should be easy. And I got my teeth kicked in trying to build this thing. I had no idea how hard it was going to be. And the reason I wrote the book was 100%. It's all the shit I wish somebody would have said to me as I was building. It was all the things I wish somebody would have told me as I was going along. But there was so many voices in the marketplace that were screaming, you know, get in the game, the great resignation, you know, do this thing. And nobody was saying, you know what, this shit's hard. Right. This shit's difficult. And so a lot of this is based, your comes from that moment and walking through my fuck ups to get to here.
Yeah. I've talked about on this podcast a bit, toxic positivity. Right. And for me, it's defined by like giving people affirmations without the tools to accomplish what they need to accomplish, right? For so sure. Go get it, right? Like start that company, live your life, be present. Right. But what's the tools necessary for me to actually get to that place? Right. What are the fundamental steps that will move me from where I am to this place, this promised land that you're describing? Right.
100%.
And so, yeah, man. So I love anything that helps to dispel that, that supports giving people the systems, the tools, the thinking in order to actually have the assets to do what they need to do versus just a bunch of quotes, you know, and a bunch of, you know, commandments on how you should live your life.
Yeah. But look, it's so much easier for these super positive people to say, look, man, here's the fucking easy button. And that's why everybody takes a hook, line and sinker. It's like, ooh, smile, put on a happy fucking face and life will be good. And you'll fuck all that. Yeah. You know, it comes down to sometimes being completely fucking pissed off is a badass tool to get you freaking run in the right direction.
Yep.
J.K. Rowling said it probably the best of anybody is rock bottom is the foundation on which I built my life. And, you know, I love that. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, for a lot of us that have coasted through life, I mean, I'm 45 years old and I think a lot of my journey up until the age of 40, 41 was just coasting on good enough is good enough, reading self-help books, going to the seminars, you know, under this belief or system that all that positive shit was going to allow me to get somewhere. man, it took me hitting fucking damn near rock bottom before I started fighting and realized that half the battle, 90% of the battle, maybe even, is going to get punched in the fucking face by trying something and doing it again. And I think success is actually found at the moment when most of the society and world would throw in the damn towel. You take one more step in, forward, knowing that it's going to fucking hurt, but you start applying what you learn and you go again and you go again, because everybody wants that damn easy button to get to success, and all that positivity crap is them selling on the idea that there is an easy button, and there's just no damn thing.
Yeah, I fundamentally agree. I think that, especially in our clickbait world, right? We live in a clickbait world, right? So everyone can give you, you can start real estate investments in 6 months to make, and then there's everyone holding up, envelopes and showing how much money they made, right? And so there's that sort of system of performative success, right? Where everyone's performing success for you. And because their success looks like the type of success that you want, then you become drawn into that. And there's no real understanding of what's at stake, right? What are you actually putting up for stakes, right? It just seems like if I do this thing, they performed happiness, they performed success, I'm going to access that thing too. And I'm going to access it in the next 6 months, right? Like that's the whole thing about it. It's like in the next 6 months, everything that I've been concerned about is going to fix itself.
Right. Right. And I mean, so I loved, we did a whole episode of my podcast Growth Mode on this, that, the surefire way to know it's a hoax, a scam, or whatever else, as soon as they come out and they're like, three hacks to do this, or they put a date time limit on it, 90 days to $1 million, right? It is a surefire way to know they're that you're just selling you some spun bullshit. Because look, I don't give a fuck who you are. If they don't have the story of how they got punched in the fucking face and screwed up everything along the way, I mean, you can look at the biggest, most wealthy guys in the world, and I'll use Elon for right now. Dude, if you don't know Elon's story, I mean, that motherfucker, him and his brother lived on their damn couch in a co-working space, and that's where they launched everything. And then he lost everything and had to go beg, borrow, and steal $1 million from friends, to keep, all of his shit going. I mean, building a business, doing anything in life, there is no quick, easy button. It is you do the work. And I think for anybody building a business, the answer is always sales. Because, I talked to a guy today and he's like, man, I'm trying to build this consulting agency. I'm trying to build this business. I'm like, quit trying and start selling. He goes, well, I don't know what I'm selling. I'm like, but go sell anyways. Yeah. Like, cause it's that moment you try and sell and explain your stuff that you really start honing in on what's that thing you're actually doing.
Yeah. If people in the market don't know what you're doing, then it doesn't matter if you're the best, the greatest, the most proficient at whatever that thing is. They don't know that it exists, then you just don't exist.
Yep.
And that's real. All right. So talk to me about this logo on your hat. It looks like a Spartan kind of Roman-esque helmet. It's giving me 300 vibes. Like, is that is that the logo for your company?
It is. It is. So interesting stories. I named my company Success Champions. And as I was starting the company, I happened to watch the movie Troy. With Brad Pitt, which is a badass movie, right? And that movie opens up with two big-ass armies standing toe-to-toe in the middle of this big-ass battlefield. And the kings look at each other, and they both go, look, we can send my army after yours, slaughter everybody, nobody dies, or you pick your best, I'll pick my best, we'll throw them in the middle, and whoever freaking wins, that army winner takes all. So they both agree, right? And one king looks over, and this fucking big-ass muscular dude's got muscles popping out where it shouldn't be, comes out screaming and hollering. The other king rails for Brad Pitt, Leonidas. He ends up ultimately, well, there's a scene before that, but it doesn't matter. He comes out ultimately and, does one move, jumps, stabs a dude in the fucking neck, war's over, right? And the one king's going to take over the whole armies. Well, as I'm seeing that scene, right, I'm naming my company, going through the process. And what happened was I went, man, those two kings that came to the center and they chose their champion, right? They chose their one person to stand out front. And then a thought hit me. Is when is the last time you chose yourself to be your own champion?
when did you decide to champion your own success? And that's when the company was born. So if you actually look at my logo, it is Success Champion done in a Spartan helm, but the S is actually making out the helm itself.
Yep. I see that.
Yeah, but it all comes from championing your own success and being the champion of you.
So let's talk about this process of branding, because I think that there's something interesting in the way you told the story, and that very much juxtaposes most of my experience with entrepreneurs in starting their business and determining how they're going to brand it, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, really going with something that they believe in, they spend a lot of time trying to do some level of singular market research about what's the best color, what's the best logo, you know, what should my tagline be, right? And instead of just going with something and then letting the market discover you and be informed by your decisions, they make all of this and spend all this time, money, and resource trying to get it right. When you were determining what the name of your company would be and your logo would be, you know, did you run it past a bunch of people? Did you just go with it because you felt pretty sure about it? You know, what was that? Did you go to a firm and ask them to design it for you? What was that process like?
No, man. I came up with the company name. I filed all the paperwork and shit with the government and all that to get the entity formed. And I didn't have a logo for the longest time. I didn't have company brand colors. You know, my website was me, you know, showing off my picture because I thought that was relevant for some reason. And I got invited to do a keynote presentation, I think in Florida, and they asked for my logo. And I went, oh shit, I don't even have a logo yet. And I knew the company name and I knew the story behind it. So I reached out to a friend of mine who ran a t-shirt shop. Mm-hmm. And I said, dude, I need a logo. And so he's like, tell me about your company, your brand, everything. And so I told him the Troy story, and I told him, he goes, what are your favorite colors? I'm like, black and red. I don't know why. I just always like black and red. He goes, I got it. This was the first design he came back with. And I'm like, that's it. I've been running with it ever since, man. Beautiful. And we've been focused on, you know, very much making that brand be a thing. But yeah, there was no thought process on branding prior to building this all out. It all came part of the flow.
Yeah. What's funny about that, man, is I think if, to your earlier point, if we as entrepreneurs focused more on sales as our first strategy and brand as our second, then we'd spend a lot of less time in that launch period worrying about things that don't really exist for anyone else but ourselves, right? Like, so the brand is important to me, but to the market, they don't care. They just want to know, what's your service, what's your product, right? And they'll wait for the other stuff to come to play.
I want to add to that, because I think a lot of people, their first business they started, even though my company's been Success Champions all along, even when we almost lost everything, the services underneath that have changed and evolved over the years. And I think for most people, if they get too hung up on branding and all that stuff too early, they may spend a lot of work that never gets used because they don't even know what the marketplace truly wants it yet. And very few of us are, you know, Google that spent billions of dollars coming up with the name Google, or Yahoo back in the day spent billions of dollars coming up with Yahoo. Very few of us have that luxury or access to that type of capital. So for a lot of us that are just kind of shoot from the hip gunslinging this damn thing, you know, it's more important to get in the game, go sell it, figure out what the business is, figure out the marketplace was, and then whatever the brand logo that you started with, learn to tell a better story about that brand and logo.
Yeah. And what's funny, right, especially about the ones you mentioned, like the Googles, the Yahoos, I'll throw Netflix into that. You know, you were probably around when those things first launched. They didn't really mean anything. Google didn't have all this brand prestige. It was just a search engine, right, with a couple buttons. Same for Yahoo. Netflix was just this thing that was online with really bad movies when Blockbuster was out, right? And so these things didn't have this sort of brand value that they have today. And so sometimes we need to go with something and the market will determine how valuable that thing is. And if so, it will create a brand for you to follow. So 100% agree. 100%.
Well, I mean, if you can throw Amazon in the mix, I mean, you know, Amazon started off as the everything store. Yep. If people haven't read the Jeff Bezos story, it's a really cool story. But, you know, Amazon became later, and the smile and everything that came part of that logo came later, and they spent a ton of money on it. So just because of what you start off doesn't mean you can't freaking expand it into something else later on down the road when you get it more solidified as a company.
All right, so Success Champions, let's talk about what services you offer. So you mentioned the changing of the services. What services do you offer today?
So the one that we're most known about is Success Champions Networking, where we change how the world networks. We fixed what most people hate about traditional business networking, because traditional business networking just hadn't evolved since the 1980s. So we've now become the fastest growing networking organization on the planet. Several countries and continuing to explode. But the basic gist of it is we bring badass business owners together and help them grow through introductions and trainings and the likes. It's really, really cool organization. The second company is Champions Table, and that works very much like a round table that you heard back in the old medieval days, where we bring business together to create these peer groups of business owners that are out there building, growing, and giving them a safe place where they can bring their struggles, and we collectively help each other grow through advice, forums, information, and a lot more training. And then the final one is a Badass Business Summit, which happens in Fort Worth, Texas. It's coming up September 22nd to the 24th of 22. And we bring in some of the best speakers in the business development game together, heavily focused on, you know, people growing and scaling their businesses by teaching them and letting them build and work on the things at the summit so they can walk away with some tangible assets.
Now, Donnie, I'm listening to this right now. I'm in the audience, right? I'm like, man, how do I know if I'm badass? How do I know if I'm a badass person that should be networking with other badass people? Like, how do I know if I should be a person that really opts in to these three businesses? What are some determiners? Like, if you had a missing person for who may be the right type of individual at the right stage of their business is to join what you're doing over at Success, what would that look like? What does that missing person look like?
Yeah. So one, if the word badass resonates with you, then you're our people. I love using the word badass because it's an automatic, you know, qualifier for people. Some people are like, oh my God, he's a badass, right? Cool. You're out, right? No big deal. No harm, no foul. But for me, we often refer to them as GSDs, and GSD stands for a get shit done individual. And the get shit done individual is they're not a circle of influence, man. A circle of influence knows everybody in town, right? I don't want that person. I want the GSD where everybody in town knows who the fuck they are, right? When they walk through the door, their presence walks through the door before them, and they own the room. And what I find is if you can bring a bunch of badass business owners together, that understanding that by introducing people to the right people that they need to get to, opening doors for others, then the world is going to open up for them. But most people show up in life and they're looking for a handout. They're looking for, you know, somebody to go be their sales process, somebody to give them referrals. Life is all about opening doors for other people and making those introductions. So if you're that person that loves getting people connected together to the right people, you're our kind of people. But they're also the people that got some skin in the game. They've been punched in the face and they're still playing. They're still going. They're not the rookies and all this stuff. They're out getting after it and still showing up.
The OGs.
Yeah, man.
The OGs. Yeah, man. Nice. All right. So what was life like pre 40? So we know sort of that story, right? Moving forward, you know, what was 18 to 40 like for you?
So I went to the Marine Corps straight out of high school, did 4 years there. And then I did 20 years straight commission sales. So, you know, I never really had a salary position. I was always kind of played in some sort of sales role. So I started off in heating and air conditioning sales, then was recruited up to St. Louis to be part of a franchise sales team. And then I did bartending for a couple of years. That's the closest I came to. I mean, I think my hourly pay was like $2 an hour type thing. You know, I did that for a couple of years and then got hired out from behind the bar to go sell commercial printing. And then I finished my career up working for an organization called Sandler Training and supposedly became one of the top sales trainers in the country. Not really sure what that means other than I'm really good at flapping my gums in front of the room. So.
Or it just means that everyone that trained under you was just kicking it, right? Like
we had some pretty damn good success. I'm not gonna lie, it was fun. We just didn't teach the cheese ball, cheese dick, freaking sales that's taught a lot of time out the marketplace. You know, because most people who teach sales come from a transactional background, like you know they sold cars or insurance or anything that was a one-time sale. And the people that are listening to them are in a B2B style game. And if you do any of that transactional stuff in a B2B style game, you're going to lose hard, yeah. Hard.
The other thing I think too, so I just left running a real estate firm in the Bronx. So that has its own personality.
Yeah,
own
for sure. Flavor, right? You, and, a really quick, funny story.
Yeah.
I came to Manhattan with my wife.
Okay.
We got an Airbnb. I didn't know better. I got a freaking house in the Bronx. And dude, you want to talk about an intimidating night?
Yeah.
Go be a country dude from Texas walking the streets of the Bronx.
Yeah.
Everybody looks at you really quick and funny.
We
immediately moved down to Manhattan really quick.
Well, listen, you know what's great about the boroughs of New York, minus maybe Manhattan and Brooklyn, I think, is that a lot of it is generational residency, right? So, so many people are just like, it's like moving. It's like if I went to a small town, right? If I went to small town Kansas, where everyone pretty much knew who everyone else was, and I'm walking through, they're going to be like, who is this guy
for sure
in these sneakers blasting this music, right? And so it's funny, right? In a city like New York, where it seems like so much of it is transient, right? Because you hear so many people coming to New York to fulfill their dreams. There are these pockets like the Bronx, like Queens, where folks have just, you know, eight generations back lived in the same house, right? And so they can always sort of spot who is the native person versus who is the person that's coming in and we don't really know who they are. Anyway, but listen, so sold real estate in the Bronx, ran the company, had a couple hundred people under me, realized that so much of the sales process that they were being taught wasn't flavored in a way to allow them to connect to the people they needed to connect to, right? Yeah. And so much of the sales curriculum was based on being generic. Right? Like being generic, like removing all of you that makes you distinct in order to, in a way, apply to a mass audience. Right? And in so many of those instances, the audience was just like, I don't know who you are. Like, I can't pick up an accent. I don't know where you sound like you're coming from. You could be in Texas. You could be in India. You could be in Missouri. I don't know where you are. So I don't know if I really want to do business with you, right? And it wasn't until people began to really become confident in their own voice, in their own, you know, sort of seasoning to their voice, to the way that they presented and really owned it. Right. You still use the same script, but owned it, that they really became proficient. They really became successful at what they did. And so just hearing about you, you know, not to blow any smoke, but just hear about you being a top salesperson, I could see how you could very much still be yourself, but also create opportunities, which would be, I think, very inspirational for those who are in sales that aren't necessarily the median voice, the median person, the median style, yeah. Right? Just seeing someone who is maybe an outlier in their presentation being successful, I could see that being very inspirational to folks.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, there are two school of thoughts. Is one, I learned to become human early on in the sales game.
because if you act in, like a salesperson, you sound like a salesperson, you dress like a salesperson, you're going to get treated like one.
Yep.
And, you know, there's some unwritten law that says it's all right to be rude, crude, and asshole to a salesperson. You know, so why would you want to even be in that arena when, you know, even if a cheese ball of cheese dick salesperson trying to come up and sell you, you're going to be like, get the fuck out of here, right? So I learned early on to become a human. The second, though, even though I learned to become human, I was always worried, would anybody buy from a country dude that wears ball caps, cusses like I talks, and carry on like I do? And the funny thing is, the more that that guy showed up, the more people were interested in buying from me. And, you know, when I say my people showed up, what I mean is the people that geek out on what I geek out on. You know, I have Harry Potter tattoos. I go to these fucking Renaissance festivals. You know, I'm t-shirts. I got freaking goats and chickens on the farm. And every time I seem to talk about all this craziness, people would lean into the conversation, because in corporate America, if you will, you don't talk about that kind of stuff, right? It's all business. It's all, but man, the minute you become human, people want to lean into that conversation. But if you look at sales quotas and you look at, you know, shitty training that's out there, you look at the idea of you got to win at all costs, always be closing, and all this crap that's been preached for years, so many people are trying so hard not to be a salesperson that they exactly become a salesperson. You know, go have some conversations, go be a real person and get into some real things. And cool shit happens by just showing up and having a legitimate, you're interested in them, want to understand their world conversation, because 90% of sales are won based on the relationship. Not cost, not structure, not anything else. They're based on does that person actually trust that you'll do the business?
Yeah, I think it's why I think really successful salespeople, a part of the metrics in their conversions that they look at is conversations. Yep. Just how many new people have I met? How many people have I had conversations with? Right, and when you start to look at that, you can start to really figure out, I think, how well you're going to do, or be able to forecast what your business might look like.
Well, the only caveat I put on that is not just conversations, but I want to know specifically how many conversations are you getting in with people who could actually say yes or no to you, right? And I think that's the most powerful metric, because a lot of people will have a lot of conversations, but they're having it with a lot of the wrong damn people.
Yeah.
So if you really focus in on, are you having conversations with the people that can say yes or no, though, and you count those, then you're going to find out if you're putting in the work or not.
Great point. Great point. All right. So you have these three entities that exist in parallel with one another, right? Where you're supporting business owners, you're giving them safe spaces to talk, and then allowing them to lean into learning at this conference, right? What's the future look like for you? What does the future look like for your business?
You know, I'm really focused heavily on getting a lot louder voice in the marketplace. There is a lot of conversations and idea. You know, people are worried about the great resignation of people leaving corporate America. I'm more fascinated right now personally on the great, hey, I never applied for your freaking job in the first place, because all this generation coming up behind me and you right now, these kids don't need to work, right? They're creating their own companies. I love the gig economy and everything. So on one hand of me, I'm focused on how do I help the over 40 club that's made the leap, figure it out, their generation. But I'm also fascinated in trying to figure out, you know, in the future, how do we help this young generation coming up that doesn't need the corporate entities and everything? They've done it on their own. What does the world look like in the next 3 to 5 years? And how are we capitalizing on this moment when the kids are downsizing, you know, everything is shrinking? And to me, that's a really cool thought process of how our company fits into that mold moving forward. And I see that, you know, we'll still have some sort of networking functionality in there, but it will evolve more with what they do. So that's a lot of it is still focused on the business growth and, you know, business scaling.
I'm just keeping a freaking quick handle on what's coming up behind us, because these kids are fucking fascinating. At their age, I never thought about starting a business. I never thought about getting in this game. And, you know, the fact that these kids are doing it in high school or maybe just after high school doing it, it's just fascinating to me. I love it.
It is, man. And I've kind of thought on the same thing, right? And my, especially with the sort of gig economy, right? Because there's a moment where if everyone is the facilitator, then who becomes the consumer?
Yep.
Right. Like, who's the consumer? Who are you doing this for now? Right. And so, you know, it's interesting in a way that there will come a time where, you know, everyone is representing both aspects, right? Like, they're the consumer that's also the producer, and everyone is sort of balancing how they're applying both sides, right? Like, I'm going to create a fulfillment center, right? But I also need things fulfilled for me that's not in that fulfillment center, right? So how do you balance that in terms of finances, right? Because you need to spend a bunch of money to create the business, but you also need to utilize some money in order to get things done.
Well, I think, but you're also looking at a moment of time where there's a lot of AI coming into the marketplace. It's going to eliminate a lot of your bottom tier jobs through automations and the like. But you can't take into account that there's still a lot of people that will never do their own thing. You know, I talk to like even my nieces and stuff, and God love them. You know, they're still not to that place of the idea of starting their own company is something they want to do. So I think we're still a couple generations out before it becomes a really fascinating thing. But I think you're always going to have John Q consumer, because some people truly like being in a position where they know the next step, next move in life. And let's be honest, being an entrepreneur, doing your own thing, you very rarely know for sure what that next step is. And oftentimes you're guessing and taking some fucking risks, you know, to make that move. And not everybody wants to play that game.
Listen, I can speak to, you know, the generation younger than me, man. Like, they quit jobs to drive Uber, Lyft, yep, deliver. Like, they don't, like, they're really relying on marketplaces, on sort of these gig-based markets. And so they're absolutely happy with, like, if you don't want me at your job, I'll just do these three things to make money. And so for them, that transition is easy. There's not a second thought about it, right? Like, they know they're going to make the money. And in a way, you know, it's almost like, you know, I get to do this idea of putting in sweat equity before I start my business. So I need to wake up. I need to figure out how much money I'm going to make. I need to figure out how many passengers, clients I need in order to hit the quota that I want to make, right? And so they're making a lot of these decisions early on that I think is really going to set them up in a way where they're going to be really excited, because most of them come out of college or come out of being 20, right? Because some of them just don't finish. Come out of being 20, right? Thinking they should make 120 out the gate. They just, you know, just, there's no internship. I don't want to work for free, right? There's no such thing as an internship. It's like, yo, I could, if I wanted to work for free, I would make videos on YouTube until my YouTube channel
took off. Right? Right? Like, so just a start whole Twitch door. Until your streamers picked up, right?
Exactly. So if I'm going to do a 6-month intern, I'd rather do it on Twitch and play games all day than to actually get you coffee, right? So there's
I think we also have to look at the global scale in this. When you think about this, in America, we got this shit easy.
Yeah.
You know, but in a lot of other countries, they don't have it as easy as this. So I think, you know, America as a whole has got to be careful as we continue moving down this path, because, you know, soft time definitely creates soft people. Yep. And, you know, if we don't keep one part of us focused on, you know, how do we keep this country functioning as a whole, then we can get to a really dangerous place really, really, really quickly when somebody else decides that we're living too high on the hog and it's their turn to take it.
Yeah. It's also, I think, just really awesome to see folks be able to pivot to whatever.
Absolutely,
on their own. Like, there's just something like fascinating and just really kind of inspirational about that. Just watching someone just be like, oh, that's not working for me, let's move to this, right? Where I think, you know, I mentioned at the top an introduction that I threw this thing and it, you know, celebrating my grandfather and the family in whole. But, you know, he came from a generation where, you know, he was a sharecropper, right? Like he worked and then gave a bunch of the earnings from what was grown to the government, right? And then got a job and basically the idea around it was that he would work until he got too old to enjoy it, and then he would get some level of compensation for the years that he put in. And so, you know, just sort of seeing that path and then seeing a path where someone's like, yo, man, like, I don't want to be a mailman anymore. I'm just going to go. Right. Where back in the day, it's like mailman was like the job. Like, you can't leave the post office. The benefits are too good. Now people are like, nah, I'm good.
But and I think, and I agree. It is a very, very cool time. But there is one other concern I have. You know, my wife runs a very established freaking, you know, veterinary clinic, and you know, they struggle with finding a receptionist because, you know, legitimately the company cannot operate by paying receptionists $22 to $25 an hour type things. And when you got people demanding these extremely high rates, I mean, there's no way to sustain it. And not that their company will ever go to AI, but, you know, AI is going to be a lot of the answer. And at some point, when do we hit capacity of scale when there is nothing but people creating and nobody actually consuming?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you watch a lot of the old antique companies and whatnot. They're going away because it's younger generations. They don't want all their junk.
Yep.
You know, even to this day, my parents are like, hey, you want this? I'm like, no, I don't want none of that shit, right? I don't want a place to put it. So, you know, with houses are shrinking in size and everything else, it's a very, very, very cool time. But there's some industries that will never be changed. I mean, how do you, you know, not have nurses and doctors? How do you not have, you know, veterinarians and the likes? I mean, so there's a certain amount of society that has to keep raising their hands saying, hey, I'll take that role. But then how do we take care of them in a proper manner so they can live the lifestyle they should be living?
Listen, once we figure it out for teachers, I think we can figure it out for everyone else. I think they're the first up for, like, we probably should be paying you guys more, our bad, right? We should be doing more to help you guys. All right, so I want to shift gears for a sec and talk about your first keynote. So you mentioned earlier in the episode about you being or you having this opportunity to be a keynote speaker. They asked you for your logo. You needed to create one, right? So talk to me, like, was this something where you were doing Toastmasters and super prepared for your first one? Did you just kind of wing it? Like, what was it like, right? Because I know a bunch of folks that are going to listen are moving into that space, right? Where they want to start giving paid speaking engagements. They want to start getting into that space. So talk to me about your first sort of large scale experience giving a speech and what went into that.
Well, I'll talk about my first one that I got once I launched my companies, because I spoke on several stages prior to, but always under somebody else's brand, if you will. So when I got my first own, hey, this is Donnie speaking about Donnie stuff, I happened to get invited down because of my podcast success down to an event in Florida. And that's also happened to be the one that said, hey, make sure you send us your logo. And fascinatingly enough, that keynote is what was a final nail in building out my entire brand, because I remember they paid me, I think, like $25,000 to go down and give this speech. And I flew in from Texas, and right before I went on stage, the gentleman who paid me the money to go on stage grabs me by the arm, and I don't like being touched a whole lot, right? Grabs me by the arm, and he goes, hey, before, you know, you go up there, I need you to do me a favor. And I said, what's that? And he goes, don't go full Donnie. I said, what does that even mean? And he goes, I'm afraid you're going to upstage me, right? So I yank my arm out of his, right? I'm like, dude, that is the dumbest fucking thing you could have said to me right before I went on stage. And up until that point, I was still in button downs. I was still in slacks, no ball caps. I wasn't cussing all that much. I was still trying to find myself. Had some success with the podcast for sure, but I was still trying to find myself. Dude, I ran out on that stage and had never done this before. And I flew my hands out the side and said, where the fuck are all my badasses at? Dude, and like 75% of the crowd was fucking bananas, right? They're screaming, hooting, following. I'm like, there's my people. And from that day on, it became ball caps, t-shirts, talking like I talk, and being me. And I think that's really been the foundational, you know, success behind a lot of things we do, is show up as yourself. But to kind of answer your question of how I got there, I got it from the podcast success. But I tell, for a lot of speakers out there, man, it's all networking. You know, nothing in life matters. It does not matter who the fuck you know. Right? It's irrelevant about who the fuck you know. Yeah, but it's 100% relevant on who knows you and will bring your name up in the right conversations. So if you're not putting yourself out there, you're not putting content out there, you're not getting on podcasts, you're not showing up on social media, you're not putting in the work and actually reaching out into things, if nobody knows you, you'll never build a business. Not in this day and age.
Yep. So the guy grabs your arm and tells you not to upstage him. Now, is that because he went on before you or he was going on after?
Well, he'd gone on a couple times prior to me going on, and he'd seen me interact with a lot of people.
Yep.
And it was privy to a lot of conversations, and I was kept gathering a crowd. They a lot of times were more interested and fascinated, because if I'm going to an event, I'm going to go hang out, right? Yep. I'm not just going to fly in, do the event, and fly the fuck out if I can help it. So I like going and meeting the crowd, interacting, and there were several times prior to me going on stage where in the interims in between him being on stage and stuff, I was attracting a crowd of people because of how I talk and carry, you know, getting to do things. And I think he just literally got up in his head about the moment. Yeah. But what a surefire way to unleash a motherfucker is to say, don't do this.
I was going
to
say, little did he know, right? That is your call to action, right?
Right.
Little did he know. That's funny. All right. So I ask two questions of everyone who is on Man versus Brand, mostly because I want the audience and myself really to understand the personal tastes and preferences of everyone who's a guest. So I'm going to ask you what I ask everyone else, and you can be as frank with your answer as possible.
Cool.
First is, on any streaming platform, YouTube is included, what's something that you recently watched that you thoroughly enjoyed?
Ed Milet's got a new book out that I have not read. And I can't tell you what video in particular, but the book is called The One Thing. And I may have heard this on a podcast versus actually seeing the video, but there is a moment in the content where Ed says that in every family, every generation, there's always one. The one person that breaks the mold, breaks the family traditions, and builds generational wealth. And as soon as he said that, I went, fuck, I'm the one. You know, so I love the entire thought process. And I, like I said, I haven't read the book, but I love the idea behind it.
Wait, what book? What author?
It's Ed Milet, and okay. It's called The One Thing. And like I said, yep, I haven't read the book. I only heard this snippet of an interview, and it may have been on the Tom Bilyeu podcast that he was talking to Ed. But man, as soon as he said there's always one that creates this generational wealth, I went, fuck, that dude's talking right to me.
All right. So what is something that you thoroughly enjoy that maybe the average person that knows you wouldn't assume you like, right? So you mentioned Harry Potter. You got Harry Potter tattoos. That's one thing for me, right? Like, what's something that you thoroughly enjoy that, you know, the average person that knows you may not necessarily connect with you, but if they really, really knew you, they would know, like, yep, that's Donnie's thing.
So there's these things called Renaissance fairs, and Renaissance fairs are these big ass festivals where there's campgrounds. They dress up an old medieval era and the whole nine yards, and you go and there's a whole fair. I mean, you do food, dancing, everything. Yep. My wife and I have thousands of dollars in fucking costumes and shit, and we'll go to these things. And not to do any sort of reenactment or anything, I go to fucking people watch. So we'll take our RVs in, go camp for a fucking weekend, dressed up as pirates and shit, and drink way too much, have a hell of a time, and it's just a great way to let your hair down. Now, I've got a funny story in addition to what that led us to do for to help my brother's company actually build a fucking wood mug company because we were crazy enough to do it.
All right, let's go.
So I'm an amateur blacksmith on the side, right? I just love doing amateur blacksmith stuff. Not all that great, but have fun doing it. My brother started getting into woodwork really, really heavy, and he's pretty damn good. So between my brother, dad, and I, if people could watch, we build these fucking wooden mugs, right? So it's literally a log that we hollow out. I blacksmith all the handles on. Well, we had built enough to go do this big ass trade fair thing, and it's a country fair. And I told my brother, I'm like, dude, if we're going to go to this thing, it's going to be 100 degrees out. How much of a fool are you willing to be? He goes, what do you want? I said, if we're going to go this thing, we're going in full pirate garb. We're going to build a freaking whole tent to look like a pirate tent, pirate flags, do sea shanty songs playing in the whole things. And I stood out in the middle of the crowd yelling, trust me, I'm a fucking pirate. Come this way and you'll get mugged, right? And I'm just yelling this out to people. That weekend, selling $100 to $300 mugs, we sold $4,000 in freaking mugs, all because we were willing to act a fool and dress up as pirates and make sure people had a damn good time. You know, so it's crazy shit like that that I'm willing to do to make sure that we find success.
Now, so I'm imagining, right? I'm imagining these folks dressed up. I've never been. I've definitely been to events that required you to be in character in scene, right? So kind of got an idea, right? But there's a language component to it that I'm interested. So are you also changing your language?
No, in not order me.
No,
nah, not me and my friends, man. We're there because it's a weekend where there's no rules. Nobody gives a flying fuck. You can kind of just be your damn self.
Okay. Yeah,
there's no in character type thing. We dress up mainly because it's fun and we get to make fun of everybody else that's doing the things. And it's a complete escapism from the world. So for a weekend, you'll turn off everything and it's freaking awesome.
All right, cool. So listen, Donnie, give the audience a way to get engaged in your content and what you're presenting. Let them know where to find you.
Yep. So go to DonnieBovine.com, D-O-N-N-I-E, B as in boy, O-I, V as in Victor, I-N.com. And, or if you text the word success to 817-318-6030, we'll send you over a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, you can find out a lot of information there about us as well. So DonnieBovine.com or text the word success to 817-318-6030. And guys, do me a favor. If you got any value out of this talk with me and Dion hanging out, cool conversation, lots of twists and turns. If you got any value tips or tricks out of this thing that are of any value, do Dion the biggest favor and share this out with one person, man. I can tell you, I have my own podcast. One of the toughest things in the world is literally building out the audience and reaching a lot of people. And dude's got a great style, great story, great rhythm. Make sure you share this out with one person for him. It's literally like you walked up and gave him a virtual hug. He'll love the hell out of it.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Listen, guys, I think that if you're a person who questions your own value in your market, in your business, in your life, right? One of the most powerful things that you can do is to connect with other individuals that are currently facing that same question or that have worked through it and came out on the other side. finding yourself in a space of community with others that are at multiple different phases of their business, of their own personal growth, is something that you can't quite put a price tag on. Now, listen, I imagine that there is a price tag for it, but it's something that you kind of can't put a price tag on. And that's important. It's important that you recognize that you're not an island, that you're not alone in this journey, in the success, in the struggle. There are folks that have done this the right way and can talk you through it. And there's folks that have done it the wrong way that can also talk you through it. Find value in every conversation. And if you think that what Donnie has put together is something that can work for you, by all means, reach out, send a message, let them know that you want to connect with others and that you are, in fact, badass. Anyway, this is Dion Brown. That was Donnie. And we are happy to have presented you with this episode of Man vs. Brand. Love you guys. Share, subscribe, do all that great stuff. Follow us on social media. Connect with Donnie and what he's doing out there. Speak to you guys soon. Bye.
If this talk just resonated with you or could help someone you know, follow Dion or his guest on all social media platforms. Till next time. And remember, with any business or brand, give it your heart, make it real, or else forget about it. See you all soon.